Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Today, our host is Mike Carano, sitting in for Bob. Mike, welcome.
Hello.
And we have a very special guest. Her name is Grace, and I'll tell you the whole story how we got to Grace. Grace, hi.
Hi.
And tell everybody who you are and what you do.
Sure. I run a YouTube channel called Grace Report, youtube.com/Grace Report, where I give episode recaps and general commentary on the drama that surrounds, you know, people from shows like Teen Mom, 90 Day Fiancé, Love After Lockup, and things like that.
And where are you?
Where am I right now? I live in Canada.
Canada. You're in Canada. And do you, are you in school? Are you working? What do you for a living? That kind of thing?
I work. I handle communications and public relations strategies in the tech world. Yeah.
Interesting. So the reason we're talking to you is my wife, the producer of this show, at First Lady of Love, caught wind of you. I don't know how. You tweeted or something, and then she started watching, and she was literally walking around our house with you on her phone going, and she's going, I love this girl. This great. I like this Grace. And she's so good. And you listened for like a half an hour, didn't you? An hour, Susan? Get Susan's headphone on.
Yeah, and I know celebrity. You're going to be famous,
she knows quality, which is
I'm going to make you famous.
And she, this morning as I was getting out of bed, she was still under the influence of your podcast. And she goes, you know, you need to address the Teen Mom thing more often. You don't talk about it. Will you talk about it? I said, why don't you get Grace on the
horn?
We've never
talked about it on This Life.
Okay. So I said, get Grace on the horn and let her ask all the questions she wants to ask, and maybe that way I'll talk about it. But before I let you loose on me, let me say two things. One is we are having this conversation before the second half of the reunion of the OG group is airing, and I am essentially embargoed from talking about anything until it airs. So though I can talk in sort of general ideas about, say, for instance, the Farrah interview that you're going to see soon. That's number one. And then number two, I want to warn you about – well, you ask me questions. You ask me questions.
Wait, you can't leave it.
The warning is
got a teen pregnant, so the show is going to take a weird twist.
Probably the reason I
a pregnant teen.
Marilyn Rice Cup.
Also a weird twist.
We'll get her in here soon. the reason I probably don't talk about the show is there's so much misconception about what people are watching. I mean, you're watching these little ice pick moments when a crew shows up and asks a bunch of questions of these women and sort of maybe hang around and show some footage of their lives. And there's just tons about their life that's never portrayed. The last time I did a reunion, and by the way, all kinds of misconceptions about what I'm doing. I'm hosting a TV show. I happen to also be a doctor, but I'm hosting a TV show. I'm not their doctor. And I couldn't be their doctor. I couldn't do anything medically. That would be, amongst other things, illegal, practicing medicine across state lines. And secondly...
Wait, but they're already pregnant.
Secondly, they all have teams of doctors and social workers, and you'd be amazed what's all involved with everybody, and that's between them and their medical teams, what you know, what they do and don't do and how they manage their lives and things. I can't do anything about that, so there's that. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the reality of what I'm contending with. So having said all that, now it's your turn.
Okay. So I know that whenever you've film these reunion specials, they are done for like hours on end, and then they're kind of condensed into 45 minutes per part, typically two parts. So I do get that some things kind of don't make it to air. So I guess a few of these questions are kind of, did you ever ask about them?
Sure, go ahead.
I know, you know, we're still waiting on part two, but last year, a lot of people were really disappointed to see that, you know, it didn't seem to have been mentioned anything about Mackenzie and that wedding scene where she allowed Ryan to drive high out of his mind on his way to their wedding, passing out behind the wheel and pretending that she had no clue he was on drugs, even though when she thought the cameras and mics were off, she was like, did you take the Xanax again? And things like that. So I find that I personally consider her to be sort of predatory just based on those sorts of things that we've seen about her. Is that something that rubbed you the wrong way? And did you ever mention anything about that on the show?
So whenever you have an addict, you have a codependent, right? That just, they are always, they found in pairs. That's the way they are found. And codependents are at differing levels of sophistication, enabling behaviors. I mean, I'm used to severe enabling, where people bring drugs into drug units when people are trying to get well. What I saw Mackenzie doing was someone who really just was in denial and didn't understand what she was contending with. Exactly what was going on in and around that whole episode, that whole phenomenon you're referring to with him in the car and stuff, there was 1,001 legal issues that I was warned about and to stay away from it. So there was all kinds of stuff there that legitimately you just can't get at, because it just...
You mean interfere in any way? Or
I wasn't there. I don't know what was really going down. Was there laws broken? I don't know. I was advised, just stay out of it. Just stay out of it. And so,
Do you think, though, that on the reunion that you kind of could have helped Macy out a little bit when Mackenzie came out with this long letter claiming that she had no clue, even though she all but admitted to it in the exact episode?
Again, because I'm not there, whatever these things are going on in their real life, I just take things at their face value and try to, you know, I know I get lied to a ton. I know things get distorted. My job is not to do anything but kind of take things at face value and try to help them tell the story. That's all we're doing. We're trying to discuss. I'm not trying to treat them. I'm not trying to make them better, though. Let's talk about Macy and Ryan for a second. I am terribly, terribly concerned about Ryan, and I did pull Macy aside at the end of the last reunion and said, I'm very deeply, deeply concerned, and if I can be of help, please let me be. Now, no one called me, and I don't know how things are going. I don't know what's going on, in fact.
Yeah, and you've heard about his latest sort of arrest. And that sort of thing as well.
I don't know what that was. We just don't know. He has a doctor. He has a treating team. A lot of what we discussed on the show, I don't know what went on the air or not, was whether or not he was misusing the medication that the doctor prescribed to him, or was he actually doing what the doctor told him to do? And that was, again, I don't know. He says he's doing what the doctor told him to do. And I said, well, if that's the case, then you need to, you know, double down on your treatment and focus on your care. This is a dangerous, life-threatening illness. Mackenzie, you know, got angry and upset that I would ever even suggest that he wasn't doing exactly what the doctor said. But that's her codependency. That's what codependents do. What, Mike?
As a drug, you're not a counselor, but as a drug professional, do you think you and other people in your profession are lied to 100% of the time?
100% of the time.
Because I've lied to you and you're my friend.
Yeah, 100% of the time. And so when doctors get angry that patients lie to them, I laugh at that. If my patients didn't lie to me, they shouldn't be seeing me. So my job is try to figure out what's going on. When I'm treating somebody, I'm not treating these guys. I know there's going to be distortions. I know there's going to be lies.
But let me correct. I haven't lied to you, but we've been drinking before, and I finished half a glass of wine. And I'm like, I'm good. And the minute you were gone, I'm like,
that was in your disease. That's all right. Don't feel shame. Go ahead, Grace.
All right. Yeah. I know that. And I you know, I was saying in the episode recap that I did, that I found that you did a really good job at poking holes in Ryan's stories. Oh yeah, I know. They walk away like divas and throw their little tantrums, but you did a really good job at poking holes in Ryan's claims about, you know, the drug tests and all these things that just did not add up in a way where he and Mackenzie, it just flew way over their heads. They didn't realize that they were being caught in all these lies. But kind of turning gears towards Vera, I know you can't talk too much about her because the episode is still pending, but how do you feel about the fact that MTV, you know, wanted to fire her for getting back into porn as opposed to the way that she treats staff instead? We saw that, you know, she pretty much verbally abuses her staff, and they didn't really seem to have too much of a problem with that. It was more of an afterthought in their reasons for firing her, which led to a lawsuit.
Again, I don't know. I know the production team. It's not MTV now. You're talking about the production team. And I don't know how they deal with that internally as a human resource issue. Obviously, the treatment is, you know, we all saw how she treated some of these people. And I feel certain, because I know the people that run these production teams, that they supported that staff, you know, had some sort of way of helping them manage whatever the consequence of that behavior is. I don't know whether they intervened on Farah or not. I don't know because, you know, I don't even know how that would really work because Farah is not their employee. She's an employee of MTV, but the production company has its own employees. So those must be internal human resource problems that are separate from the environment in which the producers find themselves. So I don't know the answer to that. I don't know how they quite manage that one. On her, you know, electing to continue with her career in adult entertainment, that was her choice. I don't know. That was all MTV through Morgan Freeman just saying, here's your choice, make your choice, and then we'll end as friends if you make a choice that doesn't include something that we will allow continued employ.
Yeah. Do you find that the show has kind of almost started to run its course, you know, being titled Teen Mom and the women sort of being, you know, nearing 30 and their children being preteens, is it healthy that they've been recorded from birth up until this age? Like, do you think it's going to go on almost for like how much longer? What do you think about the consequences that this might have on all the kids?
I have no idea.
Teen Mom, you're 60.
Yeah, you might expect some of these kids are going to have teen pregnancies themselves. I mean, that's kind of the way that happens.
Oh my gosh!
But I would tell you, the thing I know about
on that show when I was a grandmother, honey.
whether or not these environments are healthy, even healthy for kids and whatnot, I don't even know how to answer that. But I mean, these are all decisions that these people made, and this is their life that they have chosen to put on television. But the interesting thing to me. Something that is just never gets identified or acknowledged is that in both the shows I've been involved with, Celebrity Rehab and in Teen Mom, VH1 and MTV goes to tremendous lengths and tremendous expense to provide mental health services for these people. They often don't accept it. They don't want it. But they go – I've always said they should get up and take a bow for the amount of resources they provide. So – almost every kid there has access to all kinds of resources that they would not have had their mother not been on these programs. So I don't know. I don't know which is how these things weigh out in the long run, and no one will ever be able to do the studies properly to tell. But I do know they get access to a lot of resources they never would have had access to without this.
And speaking of that, do you find that the amount of resources they have, both in terms of health and financial, kind of almost cripples them in a way that they don't really understand how to function as regular adults these days?
Well, that's an interesting question, right? In other words, is it spoil them somehow? I mean, you could almost argue that Farah is the one that really goes out and works, right? She's the one that does lots of jobs and has lots of businesses and things. And the other ones sort of tend to rely on their salaries from MTV. I don't know the answer to that. My sense, nobody's lazy. I'll guarantee you that.
Are you sure about that?
Well, who's lazy?
How can you guarantee that?
Well, I know them pretty well. Who are you calling? Who's lazy? Tell me, baby.
Who's lazy? I would say Amber is lazy. I would say Caitlin is lazy. I'd say Chelsea is lazy. I would say a lot of them are lazy.
I mean, you got to remember, there's some being a teen mom is a marker, is a mental health marker. It's a marker for mental health issues. And there's a lot of stuff going on that may look like laziness that may be more on the mental health front.
Well, all of that can be explained with editing.
And editing too.
That as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, but people do kind of, some of these women do maintain a presence in social media and things like that. So they kind of know what they're doing and what they're up to. But most of them work pretty hard doing a lot of stuff. And some of them work very, very hard. Look at Kaylin or Macy. They just do lots of stuff. And I understand what you're saying about Amber. I've not known her to be a lazy person. She travels a lot. There's just so much in their life that's going on that you don't see. And if she gets depressed and ends up 2 weeks on the couch, then you kind of see that. And you think, oh, that's all she ever does. And it's really not like that.
But Gary and Christina both claim that it's more than 2 weeks, right? I think this season they were complaining that throughout the whole summer, she only had visited her daughter a total of 3 days or something like that.
I I don't remember that, but yeah, if you say that's what happened, that I'm sure. I don't know what went on this summer. Susan, did you talk to Amber? Is Amber okay this summer? Did she have a crisis or anything?
She was doing great. She was taking her meds, and she was. I met her before she got pregnant. We actually predicted she was going to get pregnant, and she
that quickly.
Yeah,
oh my god!
Well, she came on my psychic show with Rebel Colby, and she said, "You're going to have another baby," and I looked at her. I go, "No! We're going to give you contraceptive advice right now." So then, like 6 months later, she was pregnant, but she was doing really, really, really well. Super sweet.
But on
top of her life, she was trying to break up with the first boyfriend at the time.
Right.
And I liked the second guy.
That's right. That whole thing sent her into a spiral.
Absolutely.
But the new guy is 10 times better. He's a good guy.
Well, but she barely knows him, though. That's the problem.
I know.
But I do know people that know him, and he apparently is a good guy.
I've never seen
the
show.
He's got a record, though, you guys. He's got a record on him. Women have restraining orders against him for allegedly stalking them. Like, he was going as far as dressing up as the postman or the flower delivery man to get into his ex-girlfriend's, like, places of work.
How do you know all this?
He's not a good person. Your impression is off.
Yeah, no, it's not an impression. It's the legal.
I only attract sociopaths. So.
I had heard there was something, but I heard it also was a long time ago.
I'm going to go UPS man to stalk Mary Lynn.
Thank you.
Yeah, so how do you feel about that? Because she was just escaping from one abusive relationship, and then she got into another one with someone who I'm not saying it's abusive right now, but he does have a history of abusing people if, you know, these restraining orders are to be believed, and she's already pregnant by him as well.
Well, you're right.
It was fast, but
I love that comment. If these restraining orders are to be believed.
I'm trying not to laugh.
It was a given. We sort of believe those.
But weren't they like 15 years ago, though?
25-year jail prison sentence is to be believed.
Recent. Oh, God. I wish I
Yeah, I think they're within the past 5 years.
Interesting. My job is not to run their lives for them. I don't feel in any way. I don't do that for anybody. I don't tell them.
Well,
they
we
should
are
or
concerned
shouldn't.
About the opioid problem, right?
Well, with Ryan, because he's going to die.
Wait, all of these problems stem from them getting pregnant as teenagers when their hormones are flowing.
The teenage pregnancy is just a marker. That's a marker for mental health problems. It's a symptom.
Every teenager wants to have sex.
And every teenager has easy access to contraception. When they actually get pregnant, you find there's a certain amount of volitional intent in it.
You're saying, are you tying the mental health in with just basic irresponsibility?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it really doesn't happen as often as you would think for the amount of teens that want to have sex.
I agree. That's amazing,
right? That's
right.
And so
Think about it, right? Well, you're driving on the road. We could all be crashing into each other. We don't. We all drive on the road together.
It's, again, a marker for mental health stuff. Trauma, usually. Getting pregnant is an attempt to solve a problem, an emotional problem.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm not – I just don't take the position. It's just not my position that – I should sit in judgment of the choices they make. They just are what they are. They're struggling with life like all of us. They've had, you know, their life journey, and they've had some significant stressors. They have some very significant psychiatric issues, and they're trying to get by like all of us. That's sort of how I look at it.
You can't treat across state
No,
line.
I don't treat them. I don't treat them. They are not
exactly.
my patients.
I
host a talk show. And it takes about 12 hours to record it, and you see 90 minutes of it.
But we do care about them. We like them.
Oh, I care about them. Because I have a relationship with them. I'll give you one tidbit about Farrah's interview. You ready?
Here it comes.
I told her I will miss her.
Really?
And I thought, and as I said it to her, I meant it. I don't know if it's going to go on TV, but I thought, you know, we've all been together 10 years. And I have a relationship of some sort with each of these people
and their
family, and I don't wish them ill. I wish them well. And if they, you know, they make certain choices, and you know, they drive me, they frustrate me, and drive me crazy sometimes. And I'm worried. I get very, very worried for them at sometimes. But you know, these are humans trying to struggle and make do. And I just that's to me, I take a much more humble perspective on all this. I don't, and it never does anything. Let me tell you, from the standpoint of just mental health treatment, helping in mental health generally, it's never helpful to be confrontated with people. That just throws up all their force fields, and either means they're not going to communicate with you, and they certainly are not going to listen to you. What goes on as, you know, therapy on TV is the exact opposite of therapy in the real life. You would never confront people in real life ever like that. It doesn't work. If it worked, we would do it all the time and we trained to do it. It doesn't work. People are defended and people that are struggling, if you start coming at them as a frontal assault, that's the end of your relationship with them, and they certainly will not listen to you or do, even though they may placate you in the moment and say, yeah, okay, I'm going to change. Not in a million years in real life. Not in a million years. So people's, you know, sort of sense of how things should go in these interviews is anathema to the truth, unfortunately. So,
okay. What you said a moment ago kind of struck a chord with me when you said you wish them well and you realize they're just people struggling to be content and enjoy their lives and be successful. And that was something that occurred to me maybe a year or two ago, and it really diffused a lot of anger. When I would just, because I get angry for no, I'm like, look at that stupid hat. Fuck that guy. But the truth of the matter is, I'm like, he's just trying to live his life. And I wish I had the confidence to wear that hat or anything anyone's doing. I'm like, screw this guy. He just wants attention. He just wants this. But then you realize we're all just trying to figure out what makes us connect.
That's how I approach it. What I experience more than anything, if there's an emotion, I feel it's frustration. Frustration that people do make the choices they make or do the things they do. I'm like, oh, like, come on. But I know, you know, I'm humbled in my relationship with that. Again, the exception being when it comes to a life-threatening issue like what Ryan's got, because then the time's an essence here, and there's some things that are really very – these are really serious matters that if something is not done, somebody will die. That's different. That is a different thing.
Do you think he's on the edge right now, Ryan himself?
I don't know, because they wouldn't really tell me about the treatment that he was getting. I know he went to treatment, and he says he's following a doctor's orders.
It's kind of a ballsy question to ask after he said he couldn't really talk about the second season.
Well, no. This part I could.
Do you think he's on the edge? Yes or no question.
That's why she's a star.
I know all I know is that the conversation upset me. And it's enough that I ask Macy to please let me help if there's an opportunity. But I'm not sure Macy's that involved right now.
You know how I know I'm too old for this show?
Yeah, Macy, it would be difficult for her to kind of get your help. I feel like that would be Jen and Larry and Ryan and Mackenzie.
No, but for instance, let me just say, if they were just to go, what should we do with this? I would say, well, here are three good treatment programs. Send them there and keep them there for 6 months. That's what I would do. And if you're doing anything else, it's very concerning. Now there are shorter steps to take. I mean, you can get on Suboxone and replacement therapies or other things, and find some local things. But you know, my desire in staying connected to them was to urge the best possible care that would have the best possible outcome. That was sort of what I was thinking. That they need to take it very seriously, and I hope they would really think about very comprehensive care. But you know, when you get a heroin addict in treatment, they don't get better the first time. They don't. You have to treat them multiple times for them to get better over long periods of time. And there's always slips and there's always problems. That's just the way the opiate addiction works. And so any kind of opiate like that, and that's...
I had never heard that before.
Oh, it's not never once one treatment. Have you ever met anybody with an opiate addiction that got better after one treatment?
No, in fact, I was thinking about Bob's 22 visits.
Yeah, Bob had 22 visits. Yeah. And it, you know, that's one of the sort of misconceptions people have about addiction, that somehow they're going to be well after a single treatment. It just doesn't work like that. And so he's, and by the same token, he's in that struggling phase where he's trying to figure it out. And I just hope he stays safe during that. That's all. So
but can you unleash with me about the fact that these people can't seem to figure I feel like it's just so frustrating that they can't seem to figure life out before bringing kids into drama. Like Kate was still suffering from PPD before she got pregnant again. Ryan is in the midst of his heroin addiction and he's having kids. Janelle just keeps popping them out, even though she's not stable yet either. What is it about kids that they're just so obsessed with despite their own instability?
Well,
I wish they could be more like me and have their shit together.
One of the theories is, from an evolutionary biology perspective, one of the theories is that when people have severe mental illness, they biology pushes them to reproduce quickly because their life expectancy is short.
That's one of the
evolutionary theories about why this happens.
So we need to have another show with Grace because this is a whole episode. Today it's Mary Lynn's turn.
All right, we got to get Mary Lynn here. Grace, I enjoyed talking to you and thank you for being.
We're going
to
have you back after the second episode.
Yeah, and
great, thank you.
Yeah, then we'll talk about the fair interview and stuff. And I, you know, It's mental health issues are complex, right? And they are not a straight line to recovery. And people tend to make the same mistakes over and over again, even when they're in treatment. So it's just it's just the nature of these problems. And you just got to remember, you started with somebody with a marker for a significant mental health problem, which is teen pregnancy, and then you followed it.
Yeah. And it's real.
All right, my dear. Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Where can we find you, Grace?
Yeah, you can find me on YouTube, Grace Report. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram under Grace Report as well.
Okay, great.
There you go.
See you later.
All right, we'll take a break. Be right back. I think you're all aware that we just had a terrible flu season. It may not be quite over yet. There may be another spike coming. Hopefully you used hydration, Hydrolite, to stay ahead with your hydration. It is the best oral hydration product out there. I intended to invent it. They came along. I got behind them. Even if you avoid the flu, staying hydrated sounds simple, but it's not just about drinking water. It's about getting fluids, getting the right kind of fluids, particularly if you're working out regularly, running, that sort of thing. Beauty of Hydrolite is whether you're sick or not, you can absolutely benefit from the proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water. And, of course, Hydrolite does this better than any sports drink. And water alone, that's a different issue. Hydrolite comes in great flavors like orange, berry, and lemonade, available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or, what I like, the effervescent tablet that you can simply drop in a glass or a bottle of water. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolite delivers you up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. That's right. Hydrolite solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydrolite at Rite Aid or at Hydrolite.com/DRDRAW. That's Dr. Drew. For a limited time, any listeners can save 30% on Hydrolite. Just click the banner on my website, drdrew.com. Use the code DrDrew18, that is DRDREW18, at checkout. Hydrolite.com/DrDrew and use the code DrDrew18. All right, we're back. Of course, the other voice you were hearing was Marilyn Ricecup. I dare you to spell her name.
Hi.
Really, I cannot ever spell your name.
I like that. I dare you to spell my last name. That's a good spin on how terrible it is. I dare you to spell it. It's dangerous. Go ahead and try.
I don't hear Mike. Nate, I don't hear Mike. You hear what?
Right.
You hear what?
Probably 15 years ago, Sarah Silverman introduced her as Marilyn Ricecup, and I went, got it.
like the actually.
I just assumed.
I
I'm
like
so
that you remember that.
I'm so dumb that that's how it's actually pronounced, regardless of the spelling.
Yes, yes.
That's just her way. She put her spin on it.
Is it Hungarian or something? What is
it's,
it?
It's Czechoslovakian.
Czech. Oh, how weird. She's Czech too.
What? Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Weird bonding over something that doesn't matter.
How dare you? Let's talk about your Star Trek living room again.
Oh, we will. Don't you worry. We'll get into that. How do you guys know each other?
We don't.
Improv comedy.
Yeah. What?
No, we don't. I know.
Yeah.
But we really don't.
We don't
we
really know each other
for years.
Yeah, we say hi, and I uncomfortably hugged her the other night.
That's weird of you.
Yeah, for me.
Yeah.
It wasn't that weird for me, but what else
did you talk about?
You said something.
Good.
You revealed
because
something.
Because it felt like that was an inappropriate hug.
But you said something weird, evidently.
Who said something weird?
Oh, no, you told me that I looked like I was having a breakdown or something.
No, why
and
would
I said,
say that?
I said, that's just my natural face. Or you were worried that I was upset or something like that.
Probably a pathetic attempt to try to bond or something. I don't know.
So I think I just was trying to think of my set. And also, that's my natural face.
Yeah. Which I think is a positive. I do.
Resting upset face, so she could be on 24 behind that computer, like resting upset all the time.
I've made a career out of it. It is a
timely
good
reference, too. You came up at a therapist appointment a few weeks ago, and my therapist was almost yelling at me about...
Are you pointing at me or Marilyn?
No, my therapist was going, you...
Who came up? Which one of us came up?
Marilyn did. You've come up before, too.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't think he's a real doctor. Mary Lynn.
You come up in his dreams.
My therapist said, you 100% of the time tell people they're full of shit and they don't know what they're talking about. And I go, I've never done that. And she goes, anytime somebody gives you a compliment, you immediately tear it apart. And I go, you know what's funny is before I came to this appointment, it was 8:30 on a Wednesday night. I go, I saw a comic in the parking lot, and you said, oh, your hair looks cool tonight. And I went, ugh, it looks terrible. And I left. And I go, I did that. I did that exact thing. Somebody said something nice to me, and I immediately went, ugh, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? Isn't that weird?
That's you, man.
You need to take it.
I'm sorry for mentioning your...
Take a compliment.
Resting serious face.
Yeah.
Resting upset
Look
face.
Look at me now.
But you know what? I think that's
how happy I am now.
I think that's part of your personality.
I'm going to rebuild it into this.
But it's not too late, right?
You're going to rebuild it.
I'm going to rebuild my resting face into a smile.
So what else going on? Where can we see you? Where should we look for you?
I'm at the Comedy Store every week at MarilynRiceCup.com on all platforms. I got to start a podcast, guys.
Go on.
I heard that's the thing when you – because I want to go on the road.
Oh, yeah.
Sell some tickets.
Comedy, yeah. To sell some tickets to make that connection, because I got a lot of TV credits, but that doesn't necessarily – unless you're in front of their faces –
doing comedy.
I'm exhausted already. I got a big movie coming out. I did movie called Night School with Kevin Hart and Tiffany Haddish.
Oh, that's
big
cool.
Broad comedy. It was super fun.
I got to spend the day with Mary Lynn. She was in Bob Saget's film Benjamin. It was coming out in the fall. So we hung out with Kevin Pollak. And
that was super
fun. It was really fun.
Because that was like a gift. You guys showed up at the end of a very long night. We're like, hey, these guys are here.
We were like, hey, it's a party. Yeah, it was so fun. You're like hanging out with you guys. You're sick with a hoodie on. You were like in that little side room.
Well, yeah. There were some things going on. We had been in that house for quite a while. And it was a night shoot. It was at night.
That's right.
On top of a roof.
But you had the premiere party at a shooting location?
Huh? No, I was in the film.
Oh,
he was in the film.
Got it.
Playing the secret.
They can't talk about it. Don't talk about it. Oh. It's a surprise.
Why? It's out.
Yeah, it's out.
It's not out yet. The film
it premiered, but it didn't come out.
Yeah,
come
out. So Bob asked me to keep that.
Oh, that's the reveal. You caught me right before I blew it.
Nice job.
So it's a good time.
I'm surprised you don't have a podcast because it's a really nice outlet.
Well,
I saw
Mary Lynn with Christina P, and they were great together. I was thinking this should be like the super smart.
I love Christina P.
It should be a super smart women comedy tour.
We had an idea years ago, Christina and I. This was before the timely 24 reference, before it came, 24 came back, which was 5 or 6 years ago now. So even before that, she and I, we were analyzing Dr. Laura and just, it was like a house on fire, but it was so meta the way we were, you know, like picking a bit of a call and just like,
I love
like,
that.
I could talk about this for an hour, just like what's going on, what she's
I love that. I love that.
You got to go on your mom's house at least. And
yes,
it's
been a while since I've been on there.
I would love to hear you guys do that.
I would too.
Even if it wasn't, I don't think Dr. Laura's even on right now, but something
that's
like
right,
that.
Such a like.
No, but that would be fantastic. Listening
Dr.
to
Phil
somebody.
Or something. Just take something apart. It'd be very interesting to hear you guys. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. We even did a live show of it.
You know what? There's sort of a movement in that direction. I don't know if you saw, have you seen the Natasha Leggero honeymoon special? On
no.
Netflix?
No.
Oh. She and her husband pick people apart a bit.
Oh, they bring people from the audience. Yeah. I think I saw a clip on social media.
It was very good.
The problem is I'm not a fan of critics, and it seems like you're venturing into critic area where you're going to go, look what this guy's doing. Now let me tell you what a loser he is. And then you go, oh, somebody could watch my show where I'm criticizing this. But then again, Dr. Laura deserves it. So
no, it's a fine line, though. You've been around comedy long enough. So I mean, people kind of love sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes that's super fun when you're on stage and you just are, oh, you guys are on a date. This is happening. He thinks that. Because sometimes you get into that zone where you're picking up on people's stuff. And they also kind of love it when you...
Yes. But I've seen people's YouTube videos where they're criticizing other people's YouTube videos, and you're kind of like,
that's what the world is turning into.
Everyone's
the video
pie,
game
pootie
where
pie.
Someone's watching you
right,
talk
pootie
about
pie.
The video
exactly,
game. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Oh my goodness.
Can we should have talked about this beforehand.
I want. I want. Oh, is this an email I was supposed to read?
Get to it.
Susan, was I supposed to read this email?
Yeah, but I think you kind of it was about. I just thought it was interesting. A woman emailed you about how you should put Ryan in 12-step and stuff like that, and they just don't show that on Teen Mom. So I printed out that email. She's a nurse. She seemed really nice, and it was nice of her to.
She says rather than support.
Seems like this show is all over the map.
He said you dated you questioned his compliance with outdated therapies such as 12-step NA. And interrogated his ability to remain absent from other substances. Look, there is about to be a Cochrane analysis that shows 12-step is more effective than any other treatment out there or as effective as any other treatment. So the idea that it's not evidence-based or is outdated is insanity.
Okay, let's
move
on.
So I will always be emphasizing that kind of thing. It's free and it's available. It's not the only thing, but it's free.
I think Grace was really great, and you guys talked about it enough.
All right,
we can read that.
Let's go back. I want to talk about Mike's life right now with Mary Lynn and Mike. So, do you know what he's up to right now?
Purging,
fixing my problems.
Yes.
slowly fix it.
I heard earlier you changed one addiction to another addiction, and now you're going, you're getting rid of stuff.
But it's not just that. And I don't want to make this all about me, but essentially,
please, go on.
And I've been at the Improv
you
for
have 30 cool hair.
For 30 years. Thank you.
Look
I'm cured, right?
Done.
I've been there for so long, and it just felt like I was spinning my wheels, and I had all this frustration and all this anger, and it wasn't necessarily – like, I literally took fuck the man. Like,
to a new level.
I'm like, fuck anyone of authority, but I didn't take it as a ha-ha-ha.
I
took it as, really, that's my enemy, screw them.
It's such a waste of energy.
I made it very difficult to work with
the
upper management for the last 10 years.
What a waste. What'd that do for you?
You're not helping.
I'm just saying. It's such a waste of energy.
I'm going to sum this entire thing up right now. So I pitched an idea for a film to a friend. He gave me the money for it. I quit. I didn't realize there was going to be a mourning period where all of my identity was locked up in that company for 30 years.
Yeah.
And it was a very difficult transition. And then it got worse and worse. And then I was just spinning my wheels. And he flew out here and went, you seem to be frantic and you're just not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And he decided you need to clean up your life and fix your, you know, because I just disregard everything. I owe the IRS $23,000 and I'm like, whatever. And it's just squandering money left and right on bullshit items and just living, thinking, oh, I'm going to be dead anyway, so what does it matter? But right now, he has me documenting all of these things, and one of them is getting rid of all that bullshit. And I've got hundreds and hundreds of toys and all this stuff that I collected. It's way more than just that as a distraction. It's everything I've done as a distraction. Every time I buy a new car, my car is a 2015. It's got 169,000 miles on it. I put 300,000 or 400,000 miles on a car in 4 or 5 years constantly because I just drive for anxiety. I go out to the middle of nowhere and I go out there with the idea of I'm going to take photos or I'm going to make a video or I'm going to record a podcast. But realistically, I'm just avoiding things. And at this point right now, and I know it's going to be more of a long transition. I want to fix this. I want to be responsible. I want to have a sense of pride.
This
issue where I just feel like garbage. I just feel like a worthless fraud. And it just feels like
except
bullshit.
For that though. except for that. Is there anything else?
No, but part of it is like this IRS issue, and then
fraud.
You know, I went from being overpaid for a pretty easy job, and not really having a boss for decades.
Maybe that's why you had to create the boss, create the man.
Yeah, and then now I'm being held accountable for something, and I've made two other films, and I did those on my own at my own. And I always had an excuse, like I didn't really try, and now I want to be completely honest and transparent, and I want to be true to myself, whatever that person is, and it scares the fuck out of me, frankly. But I just want to be comfortable in my own skin, and I'm super not.
Saying that the fuck the man thing was part of the whole defense mechanism
Like I took it literally. Like anytime I see somebody in authority, I'm like the enemy. And I felt it in my heart.
So that's like oppositional defiance disorder.
Whoa.
The only time that I've ever made this work in a showbiz thing was like Star Trek. Like when I sat down with Paramount executives and I pitched the idea of me directing this show, and I knew what to say. And it was just lies. Like they're like, you should do this. Yeah, great idea. You should do this. Yeah, great idea. And then I left and did my own thing.
Oh, hold on a second. Do you mean that people don't lie in pitches routinely?
No, I know they do, but I didn't play along. Like I didn't look at some guy and go, that is a great idea, even though I had no plans to follow through.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry for rambling. That's my story right now, where I'm at, and
First of all, I can relate to stuff you're saying, but the pitch thing is almost like, how do you get along in a business sense? Like, I'd like to be able to get through the pitch and believe that I can do it without tearing it apart before it happens.
Well, our mutual friend Paul, who's paying for the movie that Dr. Drew met last week, told me, if you can get rid of this financial stress and this clutter in your life, which isn't just all the junk that I own, it's other stuff too.
Like what?
Just overthinking everything and not having a sense of pride. And
didn't we drill down into the mom stuff, you and I, on the phone one day?
Yeah.
And didn't you promise you were going to deal with that? And isn't that really what we're on the verge of here?
Yeah.
How so?
Tell
yeah, it's a
not it, a sense of pride.
If I'm going to be honest about all this, if I'm, Well, I got a therapist.
I know. And you still told me you were going to go talk about the mom stuff and not stop avoiding it.
I've talked about it.
And?
I don't know what resolution comes from that.
Well, you have to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And
yeah.
Sort of revisit and reframe it, and you start to look at it from different
perspectives. I do look at things in a different perspective. Yeah. Now, I do understand why I just want to get away and hide from people, and I understand partially why I'm so angry about these things.
I love to get away and hide from people.
Yeah.
It took me the first when we first met each other, I would go into auditions. I would get parts. This is a little bit of a sidetrack, but it all relates. I was so nervous that one of my first parts was the part of a nervous secretary for the Meredith Baxter Burney vehicle way back in the 90s. And I was so good. I was like, I'm going to use it. And that they said, you're great. We're going to send you to producers. I didn't know what that meant. I walked upstairs and she was sitting across from me and I was like doing the nervous thing, but it was real. And I looked at her and I could see her feeling bad for me. And then I just, and then I was like, the mom from Family Ties. And I blacked out and I left the room and I did not get the part. That was a sidetrack. But the main thrust of I would go into these casting rooms and I was good enough at getting through it, but inside of me I felt like, oh, fuck them, they don't get it, you know, like that whole crew we hung out with, it, insanely talented, lovely group of people, but also I think looking back on it, all had kind of a chip on our shoulders of like, the man doesn't get what we're trying to do. And that was a bit
well, the first time
fueled,
I became
Movement.
That seems defensive. Seems so
defensive. Well, I didn't realize until a good 12 years in, everybody, the casting director, more than anyone is on your side. The producers, they want you to do well. Like, and I had this whole, like, yeah, whatever. Like, I just like a stained t-shirt. And I'm looking back, I was like, I was kind of a hot bitch. Like, why did I think the world is against me? At all times, because
it's easier to hide
behind.
I gotta say, one of the things that I
go ahead, finish that.
Well, one of the things I've always liked about you, and the first time I became aware of you was on Mr. Show, because I worked on that show, and I remember just going, I thought you were so intriguing because you were odd, but in a very natural to you way, and I like that you still are yourself on stage,
smart,
and you still
smart.
Will do stuff that's odd.
And
or
smart.
That's in your head.
And smart. I'm telling you, stuff smart she does.
Yeah. No, but I'm saying I like that a lot. I love comics that stick to being themselves.
Yes.
Whether even sometimes, you know, at the risk of, you know, sometimes I've seen you over the last 25 years, sometimes not do great.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was because, and I'm like, she's still sticking to Mary Lynn. I'm like, that is Mary Lynn. And I love it.
I don't know if that was a choice or by default.
You know what I'm saying? Some people would be like, I got to go home and write some regular old jokes.
Yeah.
And I like that you didn't do that.
I didn't know how to do that. I wanted to do that. I was tortured over, I mean, for years, I'd be like, why don't you have a sketch packet? Me, voice to myself. I didn't have the capability to do that. I was performing out of some sort of need to express myself and
but you
for
know what's
approval
great?
As like a reaching out.
When people see you and know you, you are you. There was no she's like this, like that person, and it's pretty cool.
Let me ask something. I want to go back to this oppositional defiance stuff that you guys both had, whatever it was, anti-authoritarianism or fear of authority or who knows what this actually was. I have zero of that, and it mystifies me. You're laughing at that? My wife laughed at that for some reason.
It's true.
Well, that's why you're soothing. Like,
but,
I mean, I know you are
like,
who you are and you have this long career, but just your vibe, you know, we're like the, we might,
you're
listen,
the authority.
But
we might like punch a hole in the wall. You don't know what, we might hang some things from the ceiling and you're just,
Yeah, but some people cast me as the authority and then I get the bullshit and it's mystifying to me always. I'm like, why? That's such a waste.
But if we take away how easy it is for you to go in that position of authority, take that away, your presence, is something about you that's not like, oh God, I'm a fraud, I'm this. Yeah.
But
just have that.
But forget it about me. I don't understand people that take issue with authority. I just don't understand it. Because whoever the authority is just somebody also just trying to get by.
Well, no, if you want me to be totally honest, it might be narcissism, it might be arrogance that I think, fuck you, I'm doing something creative and you don't get it because you're not creative, so get the fuck out of my life.
I agree. It flips from I'm something special.
Yes.
And then the other end of that is I'm a piece of shit.
Yes.
It goes from that to that.
Okay. Absolutely. Well, I'm a piece of shit. Therefore, having an authority around reminds me of what originally yeah. made me feel like a piece of shit.
It's
like,
the I'm a piece of shit. Look at me.
Well, but it's the piece of shit around which the whole
I'm a piece of shit. I should have more listeners on my podcast.
Piece of shit around which the whole world revolves.
I don't try. I need more than 8,000 downloads a week. You know what I mean? It's like this.
Yes.
I make it real clear. I'm not really trying because this isn't the best I can do because I'm special, but I should have a bigger audience.
That's right. So it leaves you in that area of not doing the best you can do, but knowing that you're better than. Yeah. I don't know. It's like
that sounds
it's like
dad
slippery.
Stuff. It sounds like dad somehow made you feel not worthwhile or something.
Well, no? We don't need to talk about my.
Let's talk about it, though.
No, but we don't need to talk. I understand my mom problems. I understand.
We're not talking
about
your mom, though. Now we're talking about your dad.
Yeah. Tell us about your dad.
Like, we know my mom was not a good mom, is not a good mom, forever, never was.
Let me get this straight. She's not a good mom?
Yeah.
Okay.
Forever, what are you saying?
Forever,
exactly.
Never? Forever,
I mean,
never,
I feel like once I start, it's going to be a half an hour, and then another thing.
Forever, never, never.
I mean, just take the cult.
He's holding back.
Just the fact that she took her four little kids and moved us into a cult where we lived in one room for 2 years is bad mom and never saw her.
Yeah.
Like, and then imagine that happening another 1,000 times with other circumstances and stuff. But I understand why I have these issues on that side of it. But I also understand why I want to run away. I have an insane week this week, and my thought tomorrow is I'm driving out to Death Valley, and I'm just going to hang out in the middle of the desert.
Well, your first move in terms of getting better is not doing that anymore. That's an easy move. Like, I'm not going to drive to the desert.
It's easier said than done, though.
Yeah, I'm not.
You know, a few minutes ago when I said I love to hide, he goes, you should come to Death Valley with me. Cut to us tomorrow. Hey, no, I don't even remember what I had to do anymore.
I promise you.
Cut to you guys at the Opera House at Death Valley.
This is totally. No, there is some cool stuff in Death Valley.
I see. It's called the Opera House, right?
I've dragged.
Soup Mike, the Opera House?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
There's that beef jerky place.
That was Las Vegas. And now I'm totally preoccupied with that too. Like, do people go in there and buy beef jerky?
Yeah, it's
like,
really good and really bizarre.
Death Valley is fantastic, and there are so many hidden gems that you would not believe exist out there.
Okay, you're not going to see them tomorrow. This is your first.
Let's
move.
Get your to-do list.
And here's the deal. I can feel the resistance exuding from your body. You must on your own behalf, make a determination to go a different direction. Change it. This is the moment of change. You got to go the other way.
I don't like having a moment of change. I like it to be a big, wide, sweeping turn.
Let it go for several days, then, but does not include driving to Death Valley.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Even Nate goes,
see you tomorrow.
cut through Instagram pictures of the Death Valley.
How are you right now? How's your head right now?
Jeez. It's fine. Get
curious,
my back.
I'm curious.
You're the
man.
Like, at this point in your life, like, where is your head?
It's much better and worse in some ways.
Like, what's the worse?
Because I feel like I'm getting down to the core of some things. And I relate to some of what you're saying, where when I wake up in the morning, I have the luxury of I still do need money, but I've got a pretty low overhead, and my family's great, and my husband kind of lets me do what I want to do, which sometimes drives me crazy because I want more attention. But then most of the time, it's like, cool. I have a guy that doesn't mind me going out and doing stand up, but I can wake up.
You're
gonna
say going to Death Valley with us?
Going to Death Valley. But I can wake up and see the mechanism starting already of all the things that I want to do that I'm not doing, of the perpetual, you haven't done this, you have things that you want to do, I'm scared, I don't know how to do it, I don't feel like I've gotten what I deserve or what I want, and I'm worried because I'm getting older, and there's always like a snowball effect of things, and then there's another part of me that's like, hey, it's okay, and that part of me is getting bigger of like knowing, seeing the part that's attacking.
So your perception of the whole business has changed then, where it's not your total your identity and you need to make a mark to prove yourself?
I mean, I still want to do a lot of stuff, but it is better in terms of I'm not just like dating musicians and comedians because I need validation. I'm not going on stage out of this incredible neuroses. Now I can sit back and it still gives me a lot of anxiety and it's a challenge, but it's more of like, oh, I do this because I want to do it. I'm not doing it because I need to prove something,
which is,
or that I need people to like me.
Do you appreciate how great that is?
I'm starting to.
Like, because
yesterday morning was like, and today, it's almost like if you had a really great meditation experience, which once in my life I went to this guru with this friend of mine. That's a whole other story, but I had one of those profound experiences. But yesterday I woke up.
You just pointed at him when you said with this friend of mine.
Was that the ayahuasca I gave you? Remember when we did that and we pissed and shit?
I thought you just did like the
and barfed, and then we were like, isn't life beautiful? Yesterday morning,
pissed
I
had shit and barfed.
You know, we let it all go. We sneezed. We cried. We pulled our hair out. We grew hair in other places. We wiped out in between our toes. But yesterday I had a snowball of positive behavior, which as soon as you use language to describe it, it becomes that. But the experience of it was lasting in a way that I had never experienced. And it wasn't loud. And it was just sort of a neutral happiness that lasted for... Yes, and I think it was related to the performance I had done the night before. Maybe I didn't have the best dreams, but sometimes I will wake up and I'll know I had a stress dream because I just carry that through. So whatever the magical combo was, there was, I would say, about 3 or 4 hours, which I've never in my life experienced a sort of gentle buoyancy upward with everything. And I was like, you better remember this. Like, write it down. So, of course, today I'm like, you didn't remember or write it down. Like, how are you ever going to get back there? And then another voice was like, hey, you might not. It's totally cool. And then I'm just back to the fight zone in my head. But I had it, and I recognized it, and that means it'll happen again.
But, like, there's... When I talk to people about their careers and they're like people that are comics that are super hungry and stuff and they're young.
Yeah.
I didn't know this all the time. I just realized it maybe 10 years ago. If you do something you like doing, you might not be successful. You might be successful, but at least you're not going to end up 60 years old going, I just spent 25 years being a comic and I don't like it, or a musician and I don't like it, or doing this and I don't like it. And then you're going to just be filled with animosity.
Well, there is a part of that that this is total on the side of that. But I don't like going out of the house.
Yeah, I understand that.
But I love doing comedy. So yeah. There's also a nightly
gets you
collapse
out.
Of like, I really, this is the last thing I want to do. It takes a lot of unpleasantness to then get there. And sometimes it's not even until after the performance that I'm like, I feel really good. This is awesome. This is totally what I'm meant to be doing. This is what I want to be doing. But you'll love this. The other night I had one nighter in Indiana, and this comic came up to me. He recognized me as an actor. And one nighter, little comedy festival, not a lot of money, strange locale. He comes up, he goes, you've got juice. I don't know if you're funny or not, but, and he's talking to me, and I'm like, eh, cool, thanks. And he's like, so what is it? Comedy or acting? And I'm like, both? No, you can't have both. Like, it was one of these, like, you got to go on the road. I'm like, I've been on the road, but I also like visibility and selling tickets. And I'm, no, man, you got to go because you're funny and it's in your heart. And I was just like,
yay.
Like, he's like testing me because he recognized. And it's like, would I be here for a one nighter at some rinky dink small thing if I didn't love what I was doing?
Plus,
like,
you can get that kind of
I'm
advice
here?
At Burning Man.
I want to see you act more. I want to see more of your acting. I just personally want to see more
of it. Thank you.
Because she's good.
Yeah.
And you do lots of different stuff. I'm not kidding.
Thanks.
I just have this feeling.
There's no denying you're super talented.
Let's go.
No, but the acting part, I don't know.
The acting part, like, I think her at her best is like when you're a panel on a talk show. Jeez. And I can't even remember where I saw you, your first Letterman maybe. Like, it was just the perfect panel.
Huh.
Like, it was I just remember in my head, it was just perfect. It was like you, your personality.
Did you get the couch?
And it was super funny, like genuinely funny. And it was just a great segment. I remember, and that was like 20,
thanks,
I don't know how long ago that was, but that was a long time ago. And it was fantastic. It was a perfect like guest panel.
Good.
Am I making this up? Was it Letterman?
Yeah, I'm sure. I know. I've done them all.
You had short
hair. It's been a while. Yeah.
At the time.
Thank you.
Do more acting. I just like it, it.
You know what? I don't think I'd be back in the comedy as much if I had gotten more acting work. I'm just.
No, I'm sure it's. I can imagine the reality was just terrible. I mean, in terms of going out there and all the this, all the no's that must come.
I
just know as a viewer, or somebody that consumes your stuff, it's very need more of it. That's all.
Thanks.
That's all I'm saying.
I just pictured, because I've had this like fantasy for the last couple of years that my therapist fucking destroyed. But I just want to buy a motorhome and live in it. And I feel like that's going to be where I end up, in a motorhome.
How did she destroy it?
She just pointed out to me why I want this escape mechanism, why I want to always be moving.
You're going to be living in your escape mechanism. Yeah, it's like you're going to be your escape
mechanism. So instead you're just cleaning your house.
I genuinely thought of it. I was like, I got a great idea for you. Hire a dude in an armored truck to drive you to gigs. And then there's no windows. And you can just sit in a comfortable chair. And when you're about to go on, they just open the door and you walk in, you go on, then you get back in your comfortable armored truck with no windows and somebody
drives. That's so great.
But wouldn't that be...
That sounds like something Corolla would do.
But that gives
I don't see Maryland doing that.
That leaves the whole going outside. Because I know, if I were a comic, I don't want to get in my car, park, go into a comedy club, have to talk to people, and then...
But you know what? I like it once I do, and I need
of course.
Once I do.
Hey, even last night I went to a party, and I dread parties. I dread them. And it was the most... wonderful. I've learned this a million times. You know that, right? Like when you call me up and say, let's go to dinner, I'm like, oh, fuck, 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 fuck.
Thank you for that, Mike.
I have to go. No, but it's not personal. It's not. I dread everything. And I committed to this party last night. And once I got there, I was like, oh, I love these people and I'm comfortable around them. And they're all mutual friends, you know. And I was like, this was a great experience. I had an hour-long conversation with Evan Sletter. It was just I'm like, I forgot what it's like to be social and actually have an engaging conversation with somebody I like.
Tell about what we're seeing on your Instagram and what you're doing. You haven't really talked about the uncluttering yet. What's really happening?
I'm the beginning of this is going to be a process, courtesy of Paul allowing me to do this. Besides the regular film about death,
which you've
making a movie called Death is Funny. And
Marilyn gets it. She's like, yeah, that's funny.
No, okay, my sister got killed 2 years ago, and it was the most harrowing, just the sickest feeling. I can't even explain it. And somebody goes, a tree fell on her car. Somebody goes, what are the odds? And I went, why after the worst thing that ever happened to me would you bring up the second worst thing? Math. And then I was like, what kind of monster makes a joke at the worst time in his life? So that was the pitch that I got the money for the movie. And then it's transitioned into another side project, which is total transparency.
Getting into the what kind of monster part.
Yeah, but total transparency right now. So I'm taking all that stuff in my living room. Hundreds and hundreds of toys.
Oh, you're filming you doing it?
I'm getting rid of everything. I'm
including
selling
the Star Trek,
giving it away.
He has the flight deck of the Star Trek
everything.
Enterprise in his living room. Do you know that?
All of this bullshit is going
away.
It's going
to be sad to be terrible.
But I mean,
is that going away too?
I genuinely have a problem trying to fill something with buying shit that I don't even
watch.
You're
a hoarder, but of fun, shiny new things, not
but it's,
like rat shit.
Yeah, but it's embarrassing. Because, okay, first of all, I don't like wearing watches. I bought a $5,000 watch at 1 in the morning for no reason.
That's a $5,000 watch.
Uh-huh. You want to buy it? You want to buy it
with you?
Let's smash it right now.
You want to buy it? This isn't the worst. This isn't the worst. I have three swords. I don't like medieval times. I'm not into swords. I have three swords.
You weren't guilted enough as a kid, clearly. Because I couldn't
do
that. Do
you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah.
Oh, that in the room.
$5,000 watch? What's the fuck?
I thought it was going to make me happy.
Yeah, but nothing. None of these.
How long did it make you happy for?
Zero.
Oh.
None of these things.
See, I bought a fancy car, and it kept me happy for a good 8 months to a year.
Shit, I'm doing that today.
Oh God, no!
Drive it to Death Valley.
I'm doing that today.
I can see where a car can make you happy because it's a pleasurable experience.
Yes. It gave back for a while. Yeah. It did fade, but
yeah. Because you get used to it just like anything else. Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is just transparency. And it's not like I'm trying to prove to any – I'm not going to go, hey, everybody, look at me. Here's a two-hour thing about me cleaning my house and selling everything and changing my perspective. It's being true for me and accepting these things and smothering my mom with a pillow until she's dead.
What's gonna
and then getting out of it.
What's going to happen with all the cool stuff?
Selling, giving, donating. I have a very large box full of stuff that's not worth selling, but they're toys and they're.
I'll bring my
cupcakes.
Son. We'll come over.
I said to you earlier. I'm like, does he want anything? Because I will give it to you. I'll bring it to the improv or something some night. But I don't know if there's anything he wants.
You don't want to like a. Action figures like an eagle.
Yeah. What's that I'm called? Not selling those. Freedom the American Eagle.
The one thing that you thought of. Nope.
Because it's such a bizarre thing.
Well, just like last night, I'm just what's dumping shit on the floor, and I'm like, I have so many statues of Neil Diamond. I'm like, I don't want to give these up. I was like, I found two more, and I'm like, God,
where do you find them?
I buy everything.
What do you mean you found them?
I buy everything.
God, you would have been so wealthy now if you just invested that money back when you started buying all.
I did invest it.
In what?
E.T. jewelry, E.T. luggage.
No, had you not been doing this and just putting it in Berkshire
I've got about
Hathaway.
15 Star Trek mugs.
What's going to happen to the Starship Enterprise? You haven't answered that yet.
I don't know yet. That's there's two things I'm saving till the end.
Yeah.
My collection of skateboards, even though I'm 51 years old. And I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to anything. I'm afraid. This is. I'm definitely frightened of what's going
to
happen.
But you don't have to jettison everything. You could have it installed somewhere else. You know what I mean? Just so it's not.
I also
part
probably
of your...
don't need 20 guitars.
Probably.
Are they signed? Are they autographed or something?
No, these are real instruments.
Do you need any guitars?
Yeah.
You play the guitar.
Why do you have so many guitars?
Yeah, I am getting nervous
why are you asking me that when we've closed this show with songs I've written over and over
again?
So ungrateful.
I know. How about him? We're friends.
You play guitar?
We were friends, but he hates to hear from me.
Well, listen.
He dreads when I call.
No, I don't. Please don't misinterpret that. I dread everything. I'm having dinner with a good friend on Wednesday, and I'm like, fuck.
Okay, well, you can have some therapy with Dr. Drew while we do the next podcast, calling out with Susan Pinsky.
Okay.
But look who just walked in.
I know, crazy.
Does
to see
he look
you.
Familiar? So, James... Preston Rogers here. He was also on Soul Patrol. He also is going to be on Calling Out. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe you guys want to, like, talk a little bit about who he is. And
oh, about Benjamin?
Yeah.
Benjamin?
I mean, that's sort of the topic here. We're...
Maybe when you grab that headphone, right? That headset right there.
Be pop that on, baby doll.
So we all spent...
I wait for my,
nice
my psychic.
Well, actually, I did not get to work with him on the set. But I saw him walking around at the premiere, and I was like, Jesus, who's that scary dude with the giant coat and that top hat?
Well, he was up on the roof. We were on the roof together.
Were you there when I was there?
Yes.
For a second?
There was a lot going on.
You gotta get your sound
on that roof.
Try it again.
Mic check. There we go.
Yeah, we were. It was a balcony sort of, right? That balcony area where the kid falls
off. Great voice, by the way.
What's that?
You have a great voice, dude.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Do you want any? Do you want any action figures?
You want a sword? You'd be good with a sword.
Can I get some swords off you. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, he's the perfect one.
So he plays the boyfriend of the screwball wife. Would that be about right?
Yeah. They had me do a play an amateur hockey player with a Russian accent.
Have you guys
really
acted anything
really
else
funny.
Together?
Oh,
have you guys
you.
Been other films together? Or?
No, this was the first one. Hopefully first of many would be great. Yeah. Super talented. You were great in the film.
Oh,
I thought you're awesome.
You
brought a lot.
You.
Yeah.
I was just telling you, because something about her acting on the screen, it was like, I want more of that.
Totally. Yeah, it was addictive for sure. My eyes were following you the whole time.
Your mouth
to the casting director's ears.
The man's ears.
The man's ears. Was it last show that you said you had... consulted with Bobcat and Judd on something, and then they made you feel bad?
Everything makes me feel bad. people have expectations that are too high, and I
can't
live
Bobcat
up to it.
What did Bobcat say? You never told
Bobcat
me
Bobcat made it real clear. He goes, this is going to be good, and it needs to be cinematic. And so I went out and
bought
cinema lenses for $6,000 that I don't know how to operate. And the Judd stuff was personal, but then the worst part was I can't talk about the Netflix phone call.
You already did.
I'm like, this is too supportive. I don't need. I can't live up to these expectations.
So how are we going to?
I truly can't.
How are we going to reframe?
There's
all
no
this?
Way I can call a company like that, and I have somebody very high up go, come in tomorrow, and I'll give you money.
How are we going to
go? Like this is great.
Shame? It's the same. Yeah, shame. Shame is a lot of it's shame, and whatever mommy did or didn't do, that shamed the hell out of him.
I hate that term, mommy.
You hate everything.
Sounds so horrible.
Hates everything.
Mommy. Yeah.
You wish you had one.
I like going out to dinner with you. I love it.
I know that.
Just
know
so
that.
You know.
I'm just giving you shit.
I like it when you go out to dinner with him, too.
gets me out of her hair.
Mm-hmm. No, he needs a friend.
Wait, I do?
No, we all do. I do. We all need a friend.
Who, me? Me?
We're all like, who's you know, do you guys like us over there?
No, he does. He doesn't go out with guys or pals very often, and it's, you know, we're together all the time. So, I mean, it's fine when we're together, but...
Cut to, we're just at a gangbang the whole time. This is the best.
Right. Oh, my wife said she likes it. What are you going to do, Mike?
Please.
Mary Lynn.
Yes.
Honestly, I adore you.
Oh, my
gosh. I don't mean like in a creepy way. Unless there's a chance.
Unless there's a chance.
No, but every time, from the Mr. Show days up until now, I'm always happy when I see you. And it is inspiring. I'm trying not to be weird. But I'm always like, I love that you do what you do. And that your personality comes through, and
thank
it makes
you.
Me want to be
me a,
no, but I'm being serious. Like it's really cool when you to watch you on stage, and it's like it's you. It's a you know a stageified version of you off stage, and I like that. And you're
doing
you're,
it for a long time,
you're
huh?
sort of shy and sort of I'm sorry to use the word awkward, but a little awkward off stage.
Pretty
and,
awkward,
but it's not in a way that makes other people uncomfortable. It's
probably makes people comfortable, actually.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I don't have to be the only person that's not super comfortable talking.
They
to
can
people.
Relate, yeah. They can relate for sure. I found that too. Just your performance.
I'm sure the super well built, buff, good looking guy. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Wasn't always
as I'm sucking
though.
In my stomach.
Do you have anything else coming up?
I got Alpha. I did a movie called Alpha Wolf, which will be coming out by the end of the year. It's like a werewolf movie. So that's coming out. So like a horror film. That's
nice.
It. Yeah. Couple in talks with some stuff. I've signed a few NDAs. NDA, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Non-disclosure. Yeah. So yeah, some stuff coming up for sure. Definitely.
Hey, I have to quickly go back to this nurse's note, which is sitting in front of me, bothering me.
Okay.
The other thing she said is maybe
and
I'm. Gonna...
And then Mary Lynn's going to have to go because
yes.
she has a hard out. But
yes, yes.
Then we're going to also get Bob on the phone a little
Bob
bit
Saget.
Later.
Okay.
Yeah.
But maybe she says maybe abstinence-based therapy is working for him. What do I know? I guess I'm thinking of the bigger picture. He's not on abstinence-based therapy. That was exactly what I was talking to him about, is that he was taking his replacement therapy inappropriately. I never heard of a doctor prescribing it the way he was taking it, but if that's how the doctor is prescribing it, I can't argue with that. But that, I'm so angry at these misconceptions.
I love that that's stuck in your brain.
I know. I'm like, I have a lot of stuff, too. Can we start over? Driving here for one.
So Mike, I like the designer aspect of that pillow in the middle of the thing.
Is that a bad place to put it? I honestly felt like he was going to feel like it was a barrier. Like, okay, cool.
It gives me a chance to do the old... Welcome to my set.
Mike takes off, drives away.
So what am I doing? Am I wrapping up?
Yeah, well, we're going to... Yeah,
take a break? Are
yeah,
we taking a break?
Take a break. And right. then, but I do want to think... You know, do everybody's plugs and make sure we have.
Well, give Grace's. Is that her name, Grace?
Well, we did Grace.
Okay.
Grace
so thank
done.
You to Grace.
Hey, is this part of the show where you guys have a personal conversation?
Yeah. I have nobody's. As soon as I have nobody's stuff, so I have nothing.
I know.
To,
you're winging
everybody
it today,
gets a
baby.
Give their own materials.
Hey, guys, I'm Mary Lynn Ricecub. You may remember me from a few seconds
no,
ago.
No, but I mean, what's coming up? What's coming up? Anything other than that?
I think I mentioned all mine.
Okay.
I'm doing night school. I did Benjamin,
right. Mike,
Mary Lynn Ricecub. Check.
I got. What's coming up for me? Yeah. Nothing much, really. You can
cleaning out your house.
Cleaning out my house.
Selling some swords.
Follow the Instagram.
Miscellaneous
Instagram.
Adventures from the World of Mike Carano podcast.
Find
where I walk around and talking to my phone for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
And is that now, is that prescription subscription or is that?
iTunes. Yeah.
iTunes. You subscribe to it.
The After Disaster.
Okay. Right.
Get a prescription.
This
podcast.
I'm doing way too many podcasts right now.
He's going to be hanging out here.
Got three
more.
Today. Got one tomorrow. Got Dana Gould on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Good. You never get tired of complaining.
Too many. I don't. Is that what I come across as? The guy that just comes to complain.
And then we've got everybody's stuff. All right.
So we'll take a break and then we'll come back with Bob Saget.
Perfect. I want to mention our friends at Bergamot Sport, a supplement that provides all the cardiovascular benefits of the original Bergamot, but with additional additives designed to aid athletes and those with active lifestyles. Bergamot Sport is recommended and used by professional and college athletes throughout the world, helps them improve stamina, reduce recovery time, and muscle inflammation. Bergamot Sport is informed sport certified, so athletes can feel confident that it's all natural and it has been banned substance tested. But even if you're not a pro athlete or just getting a workout once a week or so, Bergamot Sport is still worth a try. It can help you work out harder, recover easier, without worrying about being sore or tired the next day. I've used the products myself. I've recommended them to patients. We use them in our family. And I've done so just as physicians and cardiologists around the world have done. And Bergamot Plus is excellent for what's called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which has just passed all other forms of liver disease in terms of causing cirrhosis. So it's something that is a major health issue presently and needs to be paid attention to. For a limited time, our listeners can save 10% on their order by entering code DRDREW at checkout. That is DRDREW, all one word. Try Bergamot Sport for yourself. Visit bergamot.com, that is BERGAMET.com, or just click the Bergamot banner at drdrew.com. And we are back. We are here now with a very special guest, Bob Saget. Hey, man.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, Drew, for having me
Bob
on.
Bob very kindly had me in his film, Benjamin. I will not tell you how or why. I've already told you that's a secret, but we had a great time filming it, and they were very kind to me. Me and Bob Ford.
Well, it was very kind of you to do it, and you're a spoiler alert and a secret cameo, but they won't know where it happens. It's like Waldo or Carmen Santiago. No one will know where it happens.
I love so when you fast. Say in a public forum, I already told you it's a secret. That just makes people more angry.
It's the first thing he brings up, but I'm glad he did, because I emailed him and he said yes right away, and that's the sign of a guy that is just a good guy.
And normally, so. Bob, this podcast is Bob Forrest is my co-host on this podcast, but Mike Carano is sitting in today. So I know you got to know Bob during the filming because he was in the film too, believe it
yeah.
or not.
Another spoiler alert. You're doubling down. Yeah.
But you won't know why. So it's very.
But the movie is it's interesting because you know it's part of your wheelhouse. It is your wheelhouse.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's a dysfunctional family yeah. who's you know, somebody you find out everyone else is the problem, not the person that you think. My 15-year-old boy in the movie, I directed it and I played the father in this wonderful ensemble that James Preston Rogers was amazing in.
James Dillon.
And it's I'll riff the names off because I want to. It's Rob Corddry, who plays the family gynecologist, and he leads the intervention. And that is not how you do an intervention. Yeah. You don't have a gyno just randomly do it as a favor. But Mary Lynn Rice Cub, who was on with you guys earlier today,
yep.
I know.
Yep.
She's wonderful as my girlfriend, and she posts on Facebook there's going to be an intervention. Mm-hmm. So that's also not how you go about it, right, Drew?
That's you don't not do how that. You go about it. No. Nope. And then
and,
you've got.
And then it was.
And she sleeps and with your brother.
It was
a triple spoiler alert. That's another spoiler, Bob. That's three.
Who played your
brother? Well, it's Kevin Pollak and it's Sherry O'Terry and Dave Foley and Perry Gilpin and Claire Mamet and Johnny Weston and David Hull, who blew the screen up, and you, James, and I think I just covered everybody.
Lyric Bent.
Nice.
Is that the kid?
Oh, Lyric Bent. Yes. Is that the kid? Yes, boy? Another surprise. And it just was a wonderful ensemble thing. We had a very short shoot. Indie film, you know, and we had a premiere at the Beverly Hills Film Festival, and that's where I got to see you guys. And it was a really wonderful screening, and it was written by a guy, Joshua Turek, about a dysfunctional family, but it's a dark comedy. And to get laughs out of that, it's like we were talking before we started this podcast, live streaming show, whatever this is.
Mm-hmm. Straight to video.
What is this? Yeah. Well, how would you define this, Drew?
Podcast.
What if it was an intervention? You're like, this is really not the way to do it.
Yeah.
Stay where you're at. We'll be there in 40 minutes. Yeah.
We're on our way.
Did you direct Half Baked, Bob?
Yeah, Half Baked is that's when I finally flipped the Danny Tanner image upside down and scared people. But I was directing a movie, Dirty Work, with Norm Thomas.
Yeah, the Norm movie. Yeah,
Artie Lang, who could use your help, Drew.
Oh, I know Artie well.
He's a sweet man.
Yes, he is. And Bob lit up the one of his producers, I think, of this film, of Benjamin, produced Aristocrats.
Great.
Right? Was he officially your producer or your business partner? He was the producer of Aristocrats.
Well, Nicholas Tabarrok was the producer. Yes. Do you know Nicholas?
A little bit.
Great dude.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I love Nicholas. And Joshua and he and I held on to the script and got it made, and we were very, very happy. Guy Jeff Sackman and Barry Meyerowitz put up the dough, and believed in it. And Jeff, I'd worked on. Jeff exec produced The Aristocrats, which is a good family film.
Yep.
Well, but especially especially Bob's contribution. Very, yeah. very, very.
No, between you and Stanhope.
That movie today.
You and Stanhope are like, you. That's when you're like, maybe they crossed a line.
Yeah, right? And if it came out right now, it'd be hashtag not me, you know?
and you know how, you know, Stanhope used to bust my balls so badly?
That's an understatement.
I did the foreword to his book.
I know. I got it.
It was crazy. I got it. I just did the audio version of it a couple of days ago.
You did the foreword. You didn't do the written version of his book?
No, I did. I wrote the foreword.
Yeah.
I thought
the whole book was printed on rolling papers. Is that true?
No, I don't think it was rolling papers. I'm not sure what that stuff was. But
that's a very good book.
It's a very good book, right?
I'm only ten pages into it.
It talks about his roots and what drove him to be a comedian. And
I'm not famous, or it's
Tales from the Edge is really what
but
it is.
It's not. What's the name? What's the subtitle of that book?
Of his book?
It just came out. Right?
Doug's book? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember.
It might be in my phone.
But I've got the actual manuscript here.
I think it's in my audiobooks.
But anyway, please get the book. It's very good. And Bob, before the mics heated up, you asked me some question about what's troubling me these days with this is not fame. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
Is not fame. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
What's troubling me about the world, and of course opiates are troubling me, but we are finally getting somewhere. Finally getting somewhere. I swear to God, we're going to have the next data that reads that becomes public is going to be a marked drop off in prescribing. And
so there's going to be a lot more regulation?
There's going to be regulation, but the regulation hasn't even hit yet. But the amount of fear that Jeff Sessions put into the medical community finally got them to change. And that's good. Needed to happen. That's the way it goes. It's been out of control for way too long.
Have you heard of kratom?
Kratom is just another opiate. They're going to regulate that eventually. Okay. It's like a weak opiate.
Yeah.
So
are doctors at fault for prescribing stuff just to get off, just to get patients out of their office?
Yes. That's part of it. There's a million other reasons, but that was part of it, yes. And also not to call in for more prescriptions and not to call. You know,
in the beginning,
back.
You were probably like, I have the greatest doctor in history.
Oh, that's what people would say. And then they'd keep coming back. Elvis. They behave like great patients.
And the other problem is for all the people that have mental health issues, and that is, and I had a sister that passed away at 34 years old, and she was schizophrenic, and she had a rough life. And you know, that was all old school drugs, but they would just pull the rug out just like they did. And that's how we lost Robin Williams. They would pull the rug out on your whole regime. They don't titrate you down. They put you on brand new stuff.
To be fair, Robin had Lewy body dementia.
I knew that too.
And that at the end, he was emaciated, Parkinsonian, and couldn't communicate. That was all from Lewy body. You go down hard and fast. It's terrible.
Wasn't that due to the heart surgery?
No. He had actual Lewy body dementia.
But didn't you tell me?
So Drew, you're saying I had been told something that's not true. Then
correct. Correct.
Not a flip. It was not a flip of the whole drug regime.
Correct. It was people. There was a rumor, and then his wife finally came forward with the formal diagnosis, and then that makes sense because when you have Lewy body dementia, and then Bobcat, if you talk to Bobcat, he will. He has the most hair-raising story about what happened to him. They literally become psychotic and hallucinatory and panicky all the time, all the while with their cognition just deteriorating rapidly. Jeez. It's the worst. It's the worst.
Sounds awful.
Is it always a fast deterioration?
Usually, yeah. It's pretty fast. And
it's such a tragic loss.
Oh, my God, it was terrible. And it's really, you should have Bobcat. I did a podcast with Bobcat once where he told me the whole story. It was breathtaking.
Talk to him, and I'll listen to your podcast also.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Yeah, poor Bobcat. I didn't know he was also his best friend. I mean, they were close friends and stuff.
Well, Bob's very close.
Yeah. Bob's the closest. He's my closest comic.
He said Bob that Robin would call him like every 5 minutes.
When we were on the road for 2 weeks shooting a documentary, Bobcat called Robin every single day.
Well, he would call every, but he later Robin started calling every 5 minutes. Yeah. Like I'm seeing things, I'm losing my mind. Am I okay, Bob? Am I okay? Am I okay? Am I okay? And there was nothing to be done. It's just one of those.
But I thought you told me at one point in time there was a correlation between open heart surgery and depression.
Well, the original story was he committed suicide, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And so what we did, we went around and said, well, open heart surgery, risk for suicide. Middle-aged white male, risk for suicide. History of alcoholism, risk of suicide. Recent relapse, big risk of suicide. And I think he had maybe a previous attempt or something. There was some other thing that put him at risk.
There were little scratches in his wrist. He was trying not to do it, I think, by doing minor acts of violence to himself. Yeah. And then eventually he did the horrible thing that I hear is true, that he put the little shoelaces around his neck or something on a doorknob, something like that.
But in the condition he was in, not an unreasonable thing.
How does one get there?
Everybody said, I talked to Rick Overton and Bobcat said that that wasn't Robin.
Virus?
They said the man that died that day was not Robin.
Probably a prion disease, and it just eats through the brain.
Is it genetic?
No, it's
virus.
It's prion. Prion, these things, they're like infecting agents, but it's not like you're going to catch it from somebody. And so no one knows for sure exactly how it's triggered when they get it. But there, it's one of the main, it's lower percentages, but one of the big three, there's frontotemporal dementia, there's Alzheimer's, and there's Lewy body dementia. Those are the big three.
Jeez.
And Lewy body is just
it's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. It's terrible. Oh, terrible.
Wow.
Yeah. Stand in my shoes for a few times. You get to see lots of nightmares all day long, every day. It's good times. But on the opiate side, Bob, we're making progress. The heroin story is still going to be out there and big and a problem. And the fentanyl story is yet to even fully play out. People are getting counterfeit tablets, Xanax tablets, which Mike wants to press out as many as he can. You became fascinated with the idea that you could buy a pill.
I've been sober for 6.5 years. I just thought it was intriguing that you can make your own pills at home.
I have one prescription that's 6 years old, just in case I have a panic attack and think it's a heart attack. But
nice.
I don't just like it. And then, really, I mean, people are taking Vicodin all the time, constantly. And
you have panic attacks, Bob?
Do I have what?
Panic attacks?
Rarely. I'm having one right now because you're so handsome.
Because I'm bringing them up. I'm
fighting my true feelings.
I had panic attacks in college, severe disabling panic. Then I've had general anxiety my whole life. But the panic attacks are really rough.
So what do you do for that?
Well, I had years of therapy. I was mismanaged terribly. I think one of the things that got me interested in mental health, particularly youthful mental health, because there was no adolescent health care then. And it was just something that I think I got used to. I sort of learned how to tolerate, and then I got therapy later and kind of got out of it. But the point being is that I'm doing a lot of work on stigma right now, and it's important for all of us that have had mental health symptoms or conditions speak up about it. Doesn't define us. Doesn't have to stigmatize. And there's no reason to treat conditions above the neck differently than diseases below the neck. It's all I'm saying. So
right. I like when they're combined.
Well, we got that for you. We can combine them for you, Bob.
You just got to make sure I can do that sit-up all the way forward. And then, of course, you never want to leave the house at that point.
Well, Bob, guess what? You're off the hook. This is all we had to do is a few minutes here. And so I just wanted to say hi.
But I want to talk more.
What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. How do we help all these people that don't know that they got to stop doing crystal meth? I'm taking all these pills, and they're not that – a lot of them, like I saw them last night performing, they're so messed up that they're not that intelligent about it, and they don't care. They have no regard.
I know.
We're in a place right now where it feels like our millennials and our Gen X just care less.
Yeah.
They just want to have everything handed to them, and the rest, they don't want to feel one moment of pain.
Well, Bob and I had a long talk about – I mean, Mike and I had a long talk about making meaning, that people need to make meaning from things. We're in a bit of a spiritual vacuum. We need to sort of fill ourselves with important things and important people.
Hey, I get it. As a guy that's been 6.5 years sober, I get wanting to fucking make that shit go away. And I also get when you go to a poorer part of town or a place like the Salton Sea or a place like Joshua Tree, what else are you going to do there but get fucked up?
Yeah.
Like what? It's such a boring place.
Oh, no, but you're supposed to get centered and see how good.
But there's no incentive. Like you know you're poor. I'm stuck in Joshua Tree. I live in a trailer. What? I don't see a good
I have an idea for you and me. Why don't we do a road trip and just drink some grain alcohol? alcohol out there.
Okay.
You're 6 years sober. I know. We flip you. Drew brings you back. Everything's fine. And you had a weird experience. You fell off the wagon with me for just a couple days.
I think
Drew's he's a shaman. He can cure you.
I'm officially going to keep all my patients away from Bob Sack. Officially my policy.
I'm going to get all of your patients really screwed up, and then you'll have more work.
Oh, God. Thank you.
But I'll only do the rich patients, so you'll make a ton of money.
Were enough
get out of this freaking basement.
But to your point, the thing that people could do is just show up at a 12-step meeting. It's all you have to do, or a smart recovery, or whatever you want. Some mutual aid society, you just show up and raise your hand and ask for help. It's free. It works. It's available. May not be all you need.
Do you know how hard that is?
You know what? And part of the problem is we don't have people to put a hand on someone's shoulder and take them to a meeting. Because going to a meeting, me saying go to a meeting, when they've studied this, when a doctor says go to a meeting, the probability of the meeting attendance is about zero. If, on the other hand, I go, hey, I want you to meet Mike. Mike, would you take him to a meeting? You give me his phone number. You go outside, talk about it for a minute, and figure out a time to meet.
I don't even mean necessarily.
I'm just saying it's about 70%.
I'm not talking about the logistics. I'm talking about the I want to be high, I want to be drunk. And then me going, you know what? I can get rid of all these good feelings and just go to a meeting. That's almost impossible.
Well, but of course you have to have the insight of how's your life going right now.
Yeah.
You have to have that insight. Your life is falling apart. Yep. It could be better. I know you like how you feel. I know you love your drugs, but your life is fucked up and you don't get both.
Let me just say
and
something.
And alcohol is still one of the biggest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're gonna say,
and it's a combo of those. That's what we're going to do in Joshua Tree.
Yes.
What's that, Mike?
I'm just going to fill a bottle of George Dickel with all kinds of pills.
I don't even know what that is. But
pills that Mike has pressed out himself.
It's the cheapest whiskey that exists. Okay. No, it's not. Okay. I'm sure there's cheaper. But
what's up? You're trying to say something.
I forgot what it was.
We're going to wrap this up. Bob, thank you very much. My producer is like giving me the high sign.
I love you, Drew.
Thanks, Bob.
And we're going to go out to dinner. I'm going to buy you some drugs and some alcohol. And we're going to
I'm not in recovery, so we can go do that.
Okay, good.
All right,
and then we'll go to a meeting.
Oh, which reminds me, one thing I want to say. Because I have panic, I think it came from – I had some cannabis right around the time that I got the panic. I think it may have contributed. But I want to try it again. I'm going to do it as a documentary thing. Mike, maybe you should shoot this. And if I get panic, I'm going to be pissed. But maybe somebody can advise me on which ones to take that don't have panic.
I thought you were just going to say, remember the time I went out with you and your lawyer, and she kept trying to give me drinks.
Wow. Wow. Well, she liked
no,
you.
All right.
She wanted to put you down.
No,
What's the most screwed up thing you ever did, Drew?
Wait, what lawyer?
We went out.
It was one of the
Anahita went out. We went out. We went to drink.
She kept ordering me shots. And he's like, here. What are you doing? Michael, and she's like, you can't just have one.
We went to his comedy club. And it's like, what?
Oh, was this the last show you did?
No, this wasn't our thing. This
so it's like, Anahita, huh?
Just fun. Uh-huh.
So this is more than 5 years ago.
This was a couple months ago. Yeah.
Uh-oh. Oh, so you're doing great, and you're glad to broadcast this.
No, I'm like, what the fuck?
It was distressing. It was disturbing.
Next podcast called The Doghouse.
Yeah, right. All right, buddy. Bob Saget, thanks so much.
Thank you, Bob.
You're awesome, buddy.
All right, man.
See you later.
I miss you, James. Yeah, I'll talk to you guys soon. And Joshua Tree in the future with alcohol.
Let's go now.
Mike's out. I'm going.
I'll go right now.
If you love the show, tell a friend. We love your feedback. Just head over to doctor.com/survey. Answer a few questions there. It'll help us continue to make the show better. Just 5 minutes of your time could really make a difference for us. That's drdrew.com/survey. Thank you for supporting the show. Also, very importantly, go to doctor.com and click through on the Hydrolite banner. You get 30% off your purchase with the code DREW18 at checkout. This, of course, is a great product. Susan and I use it all the time. It is oral rehydration. I had an illness about 2 weeks ago. It saved my ass. And if you also want to get some prices on Bergamot, the banner at doctor.com can give you a discount as well there when you click through. We are proud to have these interesting products, amazing products, in fact, available through the website at a discounted price. Again, I've recommended several times in the last 2 weeks for non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. It is a seriously important supplement. Keep you healthy in 2018. Also, check out Midday Live on KBC 790, myself and Lawrence Avon, Monday through Friday. We are syndicated also in the Bay Area as well as in Los Angeles, noon to 3 Pacific time, Talk Radio 790. Also, tune in every day live via the internet on KBC.com. If you miss it, We made it simple for you to find the shows in podcast form at drdrew.com next to all the other podcasts, including me and Adam, the Adam and Dr. Drew Show, the Dr. Drew, the Swole Patrol, or Weekly Infusion. Check out the family of pods. We appreciate it so, so much.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You lived.